Welcome home. We are WNST AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. I will say this before we get going, because I'm going to promote our Cup of Super Bowl week and our Crab Cake Row, and we're going to talk about Luke giving full coverage for the Ravens, and we're going to geese this week about the Super Bowl bullies, and Joe Flacco's coming on, and Brian Billick's coming on. We're doing all that. Full promotion. We begin our Crab Cake Row tour on February 5th. We're going to be at Fadley's at Lexington Market. Monday, Tuesday, we're at Costas. Wednesday, we're at Coco's. Thursday, we're at State Fair. And Friday, we're at Pappas. Yes, you can get a crab cake, but if you come out, you are getting a cup of soup or bowl of soup for free, as long as you do something kind for our friends at the Maryland Food Bank. So we're going to be raising funds and awareness, 100 charities all week long. It's my little Jerry Lewis give to local charities and community here since being exited from going to the real Super Bowl. The last time I saw this guy, we were out in front of Allegiant Stadium on the night it literally opened. A guy named Zay Jones caught a ball. He ran up into the tunnel, and you can read on the internet the aftermath of my press access that night and getting down the elevators. But Kim Herring is, if you're not my favorite Raven, I always say to Rod Woodson, he's my favorite Hall of Famer, and I mean that from my soul to soul. And you know Rod. Rod's probably one of your favorite people, too. Rod's one of everybody's favorite people, so I'm not giving that away. And I had Flynn on last week. Everybody knows I rode in a parade with him, and I love him. But, like, I don't – if I put you in that class of, like, saying you're my all-time favorite Raven, but, dude, I love you. Miss you. How are you? How's life? How's the family? And you're watching football, right?
Oh, I'm doing well, man. To be honest with you, at this juncture in my life, to have two great kids in college and one in high school right now, excelling at whatever they're doing, it's unbelievable. I mean, you know, I have a great wife. I've been married 20, going on 23 years. So things are looking good, man. Things are looking good.
Well, you know what, man? I go out to the Super Bowl every year for 27 years until my access is taken away. And I talk to old football players, right? And some of them are broken down. And some of them are there on head trauma or physical issues or insurance. All the things as a vested NFL veteran. You played in two Super Bowls, won one, lost one. We're going to talk about all this, right? You were on the most famous defense in the history of the game. All, you know, you have all of these, you know, pieces that are into all this stuff. We don't hear enough about the guy that left the game that's doing okay. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I don't have the guy saying, how you feel? I feel great. And I'm making money and I'm doing something else. I'm working for Clear. I got a beautiful family. Like, I don't get to tell that story too often. So please tell it. It's a good story. You're a kid from Ohio who breed football and took it into Pennsylvania and brought it down to Maryland. And, you know, I mean, you had a really nice, tidy, wonderful career playing across with a bunch of Hall of Famers, man.
Oh my God. I mean, just to play with some of the guys I play with, you can't write that up. You know, I've been very fortunate that I got drafted into an organization like Baltimore, which, you know, Ozzie Newsome, he's done a great job, and now it's filtered down to Eric DaCosta. But we're still like family. I go there every year to watch games, you know, the kind of regale on a lot of the former teammates. But man, look, I've been trying to take care of myself since I started college. I still do it after I retired. That's not to say I can play anymore. That's not to say that at all. But I can tell you, though, if I was able to practice the way these guys practice now, I probably could have did about 4 or 5 more years, to be honest with you.
Oh, really? It's Camp Cream Puff?
Oh, it's Camp Cream Puff. Oh, my gosh. But it's necessary, though, because now the guys play more games, and the game is just as intense as we played. But just the nature of the game has changed. Everything is geared towards the offense. So, you know, it is what it is. Things have changed. Just like, you know, it's transitioned from 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s. So, you know, it's just the nature of the game.
Well, you were always a matter of fact guy. You had real smart, good parents. And like, you came into this thing, I think you knew it was not for long for, you know, anyone. I mean, and you know, you were highest draft pick and played on good teams. You had a contract. Playing on the great team led to you and Jamie Sharp and a lot of other guys going to other places and doing very well for themselves and finding themselves in a great environment where you were with the greatest show on turf and trying to defend that in practice every day as well. You know, for you, what did you love about it then? And I would think there are times you see it and your back hurts a little, and there are times that you love it again, or you see a Lamar or a Patrick Mahomes or a Tom Brady, seeing guys that you played against Tom Brady. And how close do you stay tethered to it? Because you are a guy, as I see you out doing other things, people don't even know you're a football player. You walk the earth. You're not showing off your ring. You're not showing up at parties and out. You know, you're not that guy. But there's also a point where I think you kind of got away from the game. And I think a lot of people that played the game for a period of time just wanted to like not watch it every week and not be invested in every day because it was like your life. It was what you did.
Well, I've actually come back around to watching NFL football. For a time there, I didn't watch it just because I was so involved and I had my kids younger. So I had my kids when I was 26, 27, 28. And so that took up the majority of my time. And so I was so involved with them, especially when you consider all three of my kids were athletes and it was year round. So I was like, oh, I got to go to this gymnastics meet or cheerleading competition or track meet. And, you know, and I'm still there. Because right now my daughter competes in college in gymnastics, and then my other daughter's a cheerleader, and my son's a football player. So I'm still doing the same.
Hey man, Mitchell's kids running around for the Ravens, right? How crazy was that, right?
I'm telling you. And so, and it's funny because I keep in touch with Anthony, and it's funny is my son is probably going to be going down to Atlanta to train with him for the summer, you know, because he's a freshman in high school.
Okay, so your son wants to play NFL ball.
My son right now, he's like me. He's very low key, but he's like, I want to take it step by step. I just want to go to college. Cool. If they want to pay for college.
But you watch football with your son now, and that maybe has brought you back a little bit.
College. I watch a lot of college football. I'm a college football junkie. Saturdays, don't call me. Don't talk to me.
Really? See, I don't know you, Kim Herring. I thought I knew you. You're in New Jersey. Nobody in New Jersey watches college football.
Well, you know, yeah, you know, it's you know what it is? There's a lot of the good players from Jersey, you know, they're starting to come around, coming back to, you know, Rutgers, because Greg Schiano, who recruited me from high school and was my position coach in college, now is the head coach there. But a lot of the kids I played with from Jersey would go to Penn State or go to Syracuse, you know, schools like that. So
or Maryland.
Yeah, or Maryland. But where my son goes to school is pretty much the top school in Jersey for the last number of years. So we'll see how it goes. He's only a freshman, so we'll see how it goes.
All right, Kim Herring is here. Played on our Super Bowl 35 champs. Look him up, number 20 in your you wore 20. That's crazy. I think the other 20, the other guy. The other guy did okay, right?
Hey, cool dude, man. Ed Reed is a great guy.
Yeah, you know, I through all of this and getting to know guys like you and seeing all this, I don't fanboy any of you, but like getting you on this week. We have an AFC championship game here. First time ever, right? So for the franchise, first time since 71 when the Oakland Raiders, my dad went to that game, very young John Madden. Fred Biletnikoff still alive. A couple of the guys that played in that game. But most of the guys that played in that game are deceased. It's 53 years ago now, right? So it's a special thing for the city here. And you have a special thing when you come back as former player of the game, visiting people in suites, bringing your kids, whatever it is, you have a Super Bowl ring from being here and seeing all this. This is something we've never done, right? So I've run the march down in New Orleans. We were in Tampa together that night. I have pictures of you, me, and your wife at the party with the Lombardi trophy and at the Tampa West Shore, the whole deal. But this is something we've never done, is flooded out into the streets of Baltimore after winning the right to go to the Super Bowl at home. Seems weird. Like, it seems like, man, we've been a better franchise. Not once, because of Brady, because of Manning, because of, you know, all the way through. We're sort of the hunted here in this case. And I know you're watching enough NFL football that I know you're familiar with Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson. Where do you see this from a football former player and a guy that views the game?
Honestly,
Lamar's changed everything, right?
Honestly, I didn't even know that stat about us never hosting an AFC championship until I watched the game. I was like, we never hosted one? Then you started thinking about it. I'm like, I guess not. Because the two Super Bowls we had, we were away teams, you know, in Denver and all that. So I'm like, wow, that is true. It's like, we never actually hosted one. So it's interesting to see how the team's going to respond. I know the fans are going to respond incredibly. So that's not even comes into question. But now it's like, it's on the team now, you know? And so just that added pressure, but I think they're going to do great because how they came out the first half versus Houston, and Houston had a great game plan. I'm not even going to lie. I was really surprised how they kind of buckled down Baltimore's offense, but it's all about adjustments. The game of football is all about adjustments. In the second half, Baltimore just ran roughshod over them. I mean, you're talking about physical football. They went back to what they know was Lamar, timely passing, timely running, handing it off to the running back to just let him run downhill.
Well, there was an efficiency about that second half that they weren't beating the blitz. I mean, the blitz was just coming, and then the special teams thing happened. It's cold out. They hadn't played together as a unit for 20 days. All that rest versus rust. And, Kim, you know, I'm not at the games any longer. It's a long story. Google it. Involves Chad Steele. And I'm watching on TV. And from the field with Scott Van Pelt up to the booth to this, everybody's, like, mortified. Right? It's 10-10. Run me through that for you as a player and the expectations, because you have such expectations for yourself. And right. You were on the wrong side of this as a Ram. You're on the right side as a Raven at various points, winning and losing big games. And what happens in the adjustment that happens? Because apparently Lamar gave a speech for the ages, according to players. Right. And if I were in the locker room, I'd be talking to guys like you and saying, dude, what in the world did he say? Like, what? Tell me about it, because it feels to me like something happened there at halftime.
Well, I think if that's the story rolling with Lamar's speech, I think that was necessary. Because one thing, when you are what I call the team that's supposed to win, you know, and you actually they got punched in the mouth the first half. Let's just be honest. They got punched in the mouth. The Houston Texans kind of surprised them because they were blitzing them all day. And they were spying him with the linebacker, you know, who Chris Harris is an unbelievable linebacker, and you know, in his own right. But you kind of have to change the mindset when you get into halftime. And I'm sure he says some things that guys never heard come out of his mouth before. you know what I'm saying? They don't have a Ray Lewis, so to speak. But I'm sure he says some things to get that team on a different level, because there are times you just need that. You need to come out of your shell and do what you need to do and say what you need to say, because you know, the last couple of years, we've fallen short. We've had these teams where we thought we're going to go to the Super Bowl, unfortunately. And then Lamar's record in the playoffs isn't always that great, even though he's shown unbelievable potential. And so I'm sure he got frustrated with, you know, the first half and said, look, guys, we got to cut this crap out and, you know, play to our potential, because I ain't going home.
Watching the Chiefs and the Bills on Sunday night, you get the sense of the heavyweight fight, right? Like, you know, that's the kind of game this is going to be. And the Ravens, we thought maybe the 49ers would be that, or the Lions earlier in the year, anything in the division. The schedule didn't dictate that, not even with the Dolphins, who were all banged up. I mean, the Ravens have beaten every good team really, really soundly, but they've managed to avoid the Bills and the Chiefs and the schedule makers and, you know, how things worked out. This is kind of what you want to see. And I don't know that the Chiefs are playing their best football that we've ever seen them play. Maybe defensively they are, and maybe that'll be an issue for Lamar and Steve Spagnuolo and sort of that whole Harbaugh, Reed, everybody knows everybody. But and really, they're the things Mahomes does are the things that Lamar does. Sort of superhuman things we've never seen quarterbacks do, throwing on the run, faking. Mahomes showed the football to the safety on the edge and ran away from it. I mean, like playground. Ish, you know what I'm saying? Stuff that would be disrespectful if it weren't so good to some degree. And they play the game differently. For you watching Mahomes do this and now watching Lamar, from a defensive player's standpoint, this is the best on best. I mean, this is going to be a heavyweight fight.
Oh, of course. I mean, I think Lamar and, you know, Mahomes have this way of improvising when they play. And it's one of those things where you would always see it. Like there was that kind of level when I played, it was just never done during a game. I saw it all the time in practice playing with guys, and it's like, all right, cool. But you know, the coaches always come back, you better not do that in a game. Now it's accepted or really kind of frowned upon if you don't improvise, because they don't want a guy who a quarterback who just stands in the pocket, you know, like a statue and tries to throw the ball. I'm like, no, if you can't run in today's game as a quarterback, you don't belong.
Josh Allen is playing rugby out there the other night. With the season on the line, throwing the ball sideways, like across the field, like all this throwing off the back foot, don't throw across your body, like all of these coaching axioms that every quarterback coach in the world ever told Trent Dilfer to do, it's all over with now, because you never saw Peyton Manning show the football to someone because he didn't have the physical ability to get away from a guy like you.
I kind of got a thought on that though too, if you think about it. How the game has changed and how the rules have changed actually opens up the door for plays like that, because when a quarterback now leaves the pocket, guys are a little apprehensive of, okay, can I hit him a certain way? Do I need, you know, a certain angle if I hit him up top? You know, so when a quarterback kind of slows down and shows you the ball like the way he did, you kind of stop. Like, okay, should I hit him? Because back when I played, we would just hit you regardless. I don't care if you fake the ball or not. You're going to get hit. It is what it is. And so I've seen that in the way guys kind of blitz and attack the quarterback. They're a little more apprehensive of how they're going to, you know, take them down. Because now you get called for everything. So, you know,
well, the fake slide thing is Bouja.
Yeah.
Fake slide. Stop that, dude. Fake slide. That to me should be like intentional grounding here. Right. And we're going to give you 15 from where you did it. You know what I mean? Right. Like, right. We're not going to fake slide, dude. That cannot be in the repertoire of the quarterback.
If you think about it, you even see somebody like Josh Allen, who's so big, but just him running, I see guys, the way they attack him, not the same, even though he's so big. You know, because there's a certain specific quarterback rule, so to speak, that, you know, you don't want to hit the quarterback a certain way, because think about it. That's what NFL sells their game on, is the play of the quarterback.
Well, the reason the Ravens and the Chiefs are the game this week and it's not the Bengals and somebody else is because they didn't have a chance. You know, once your quarterback gets hurt. Kim Herring is here. He is a Super Bowl champion. What does that mean to you all these years later? Did you watch the Bullies movie?
Yes, of course. Come on, man. You know, I had to watch that.
Do you watch it with your kids and stuff or no? Yeah. So how's that go? Like, this is, I asked Flynn about this because it's kind of weird because, like, I know you, I love you, your wife, we see each other every couple of years and get together in some weird way in parking lots in Las Vegas from time to time. But like all of you have these children that I don't know in any way. And they have this whole purview of life that had no basis on how wet and cold that parade was that day, you know?
Oh, no basis. Not even that. I didn't even have my daughter back then. That's the thing. She's like, you know, I think I had her the next couple years after that. But actually to be on some kind of video, like, you know, the Baltimore Bullies, it's pretty cool, man. I ain't gonna lie. It's pretty cool. My son, I mean, it's funny because my son was watching with me and he would just look at the video, then look over at me and go, look at the video, and look over at me.
Well, the other thing is, back in the day, dude, if there was something sports oriented, you needed to find an expert like me on the radio to tell you a story, or you needed to go to maybe the library and find an old Sports Illustrated or read an old newspaper or wait for the television or the ESPN man to give you a little piece of the history of whatever happened before your time. You know, once your kid figures out you played football, he can probably Google you and find you in a Penn State helmet, find your rookie card, find all this stuff that he's finding behind your back that you have in an attic that you're like, he wasn't ready for that. It's like, right. Not to your 12, son, or whatever. But I would think that, like, your kids see the whole world differently. I saw this with Bowler's kids. He came out and was a fan of the game and rolled. And he's got a dealership down. You know, all of you have these lives. And then tragically, Goose and, you know, people we've lost along the way and their children doing good things for charity. And I see his daughter doing the thing with the Jets and like all that. But like, your kids get this different view of it. And then they come back and you put your jersey on. And that's just kind of neat, I think.
It is. And it kind of gives you a hand at, when you say certain things to them, they kind of like listen and I'm like, okay, all right, he's been there before, especially when I talk to my son, just because he's playing football and running track, what I did. So it's kind of like you have this, you know, like, hey, bro, I've been there. You saw the video. Like, come on, you know, I ain't gonna lie. I'm not gonna tell you. Cause you know, as you get older as a father, you always, oh, back when I was in high school, I'm like, come on, man. That was like 30 years ago. Let it go.
Dude, I've been on the air 32 years now. And like, I don't know why younger people wouldn't listen because I do have some wisdom to offer. It's growing in right here, Kim. But yeah, you know, but I've seen a lot of things, man. And I haven't seen an AFC championship game in Baltimore. Right. Like, I was at Ghost of the Post. I was at that game. I was at the game when Croner went into the upper deck. My dad took me to Colts games beginning in 1973. Joe Namath was the first quarterback I ever saw, like the whole deal. And I'm a lifer. Anytime I talk Houston Oilers stuff, because we didn't have the team for all those years, I was an Oilers fan. I think you knew that when you came in. I wasn't that far removed. You played against the Tennessee Oilers. Not a lot of people have played against the Derek jerseys.
At Vanderbilt University. I do remember.
Dude, I have pictures there. You weren't at the Liberty Bowl. You weren't on the 97 team. You were on the 98 team. You were at the Liberty Bowl.
97, yeah.
You were at the Liberty Bowl game. Yeah. Of course you were.
I was like, this is crazy. I was like,
dude, there were like 5,000 people at that game. Yeah. That was like a plague game, right?
Yep.
Nobody would believe how few people were at the Liberty Bowl for the Tennessee Oilers in Memphis. All right. All right, so from your where are you in all of this? You're not going to the Super Bowl. You watch from afar. Your kids, girls, boys, college, like all of that. Give me what it means to you if the Ravens can complete the deal here. And you root for Lamar, right? You're a Cleveland kid, though, so you might have had a little Flacco shoe on you last week, 2 weeks ago, right?
Well, it's funny because I'm technically a Cleveland kid, born most of my life and lived in Detroit. And I moved to Cleveland when I was in high school. So my freshman year in high school, I moved to Cleveland.
So you have pictures as a little boy in Lions gear, maybe?
No. I was never a Lions fan.
No, okay. All right.
Now, I was a Detroit Pistons fan because they were so rough and tumble. And that's what Detroit was back in the early 80s, mid-80s. Well, they were rough, man, with the Mahomes and, you know, Vinny Johnson and Isaiah Thomas and Rick Mahorn. Oh, yeah, they were – Bill Laimbeer, they were rough.
You don't want to leave Laimbeer out, man. He's the one giving all the fouls. Come on now, you know.
I used to love it.
Bad Boys, you know. So that was your thing. Bad Boys were your thing.
Oh, heck yeah. Oh, yeah. They represented Detroit. And I'm like, yeah, that's it.
But you consider yourself a Raven fan?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I consider myself a Raven, period, because they're the ones who took a chance on me and drafted me. And so I actually have a lot more, you know, friends from the Ravens. I actually keep in touch with the Ravens people. I actually still know a lot of Ravens staff, you know, in front office. So
you're even nice to the media guys. Well, just me.
I'm pretty much nice to a lot of people.
I know you are. You're a nice man. Kim Herring is here. Super Bowl 35 champion. Are we going to do it? I mean, come on. Give me a pep talk here, Kim. Come on.
I think we can. If a couple of our guys get healthy in the secondary, because that's where we've been really beat up the last number of games. It's guys in the secondary. So I think if we can get that short away, I think we're going to be just fine. Because it's not like, other than Rice, it's not like Kansas City is coming out with, you know, tier one level wide receivers either. So if we can just get up on Patrick Mahomes and kind of keep him in check in terms of keeping him in the pocket, I think we should be fine.
So look, man, you know, I've been nice to you the whole time here. I got to go Barbara Walters and go to the other side and say, what's it like to lose one of these?
You know what it is? You don't realize how bad it is till the next day. We're like, man, we were supposed to win this game. And I think it made it even worse that year that we lost to New England is because our defense played really well. Because if you look at the point of the game, I think Tom only threw for like 150 something yards or 160 yards.
Well, he was very young.
Yeah, but we played as a defense very well. Remember, we gave up a touchdown off an interception return of Ty Law for a touchdown. As a defense, it's hard to make that back up. It really is. But it's not like we got blown out. Was it 17-14? You know, but it was a great game, but it's one of those games I kind of look at and go, well, I think I made Tom Brady because of that.
Yeah, well, it was the beginning, right? I want to say this to you too, because you went from one sort of legendary team to another legendary team that was known for offense, right? And you played on this legendary defensive team. But to go over and defense Kurt Warner every week and Torrey Holt and, you know, Bruce, this guy's running around the other side for you in practice, just in practice alone, and changing conferences when it meant something, you know, back in the day. Kurt Warner, all these years later, like of all the people I've met in the game, he is just a special human, like in a different way. Like I've done things with kids and charities and caught footballs from him and been out and watched him deal with wounded warriors and deal with, you know, at-risk kids and special athletes as well. Fundamentally challenged in different ways, just a special dude. You know, I guess you found that when you got there because they had a pelt on the wall and you were sort of joining up into another operation where you could win and Vermeil and all that. I mean, you had a second really special circumstance come into your life. Money, went to a football place that had baseball, like all of that. You already had won, like, but losing that, I bet it, you know, pisses you off in each, you know, you, when I have you on, I think Raven Super Bowl champion and you're thinking, damn, I lost one of those too. And
honestly, later, right? A good indicator was the season we had after that, after we lost. And I don't think a lot of people remember, we lost like the first six games of the season. That next season, we started 0-6 that next season and had to come back just to be 6-6. And then I think we finished with a couple other losses. I think we finished with like 7-9 that year. So,
the franchise never really recovered.
Recovered. And you could just tell, you know, everybody's like, oh, I'm fine. It's just Super Bowl loss. but our play really didn't indicate that. You know, I think a lot of guys still kept that, you know, point of loss to them and just never really found a reason to kind of play at the beginning of the season. Now we got it going in the middle part, but remember we started 0-6. So it's hard to get out of an 0-6 hole.
Well, that's, I guess, what I'm saying for where Joe Burrow is and Jared Goff's trying to get back there now, that you get there and then you don't win. And at least for you, you know, you have the films to show your kids that you did win one, right? Like, and if the only thing you ever did was lose one, there's no, you know, it's not the, it's not shameful, but it's not something you remember in the same way. And it can be a great season. And it was a great season for you with the Rams that year. Everything was great till the ball went through. And then all of a sudden that's the razor's edge. And I mean, even the Bills missing this field goal and what the Cowboys went through this year and being really good and like, but not good enough. It's devastating for, and the change that's about to happen for this football team specifically, where all the coaches, salary cap, like all of that affects all of the next thing that happens. And, you know, the Ravens never got back there, right? They had to get Joe Flacco and Brian Billick. Like all those guys never got back there. The Rams, to your point, never got, lost a franchise later on after. These things have consequences when you don't win.
Oh, yeah, it does. And I call it the Dan Marino effect. You know, he made the Super Bowl his first year and never went back. You know what I'm saying? So how does that feel? And you just look at the Buffalo Bills. I mean, they've lost how many games to Kansas City in a row? Three or four?
And it's a second generation of that for the fans, right?
Yeah, second generation. And so they're always on the cusp, but they never get there. And so as a player, sometimes you always think, well, we have a good chance to make it next year. And like you said, there's going to be so many changes every year, depending on salary cap and, you know, guys want to get paid. And, you know, it is what it is. It's just how the game is. So you're not guaranteed to actually make it back in a Super Bowl, nonetheless playoffs.
Well, that's why I would say, we don't call it your first chance, man. This is the chance.
Yeah, it's the chance. So that's why you have to take advantage of it. And I'm sure that was probably going through Lamar's head when he, you know, at halftime, like, look, guys, we don't know how many times we're going to be in this situation. You know, I mean, especially for them to play the way they're playing with all the players they lost at the beginning of the season, you know, with Mark Andrews and, you know, a couple of running backs. And I mean, it's crazy. I didn't think they were going to be as good as this when they lost all those guys.
You know, Kim, I'm having Flacco on this week, and I'm going to talk to him about this. But, and then, you bring out the best of me. All of you do. So I appreciate you coming on. Kim Herring's here, former Super Bowl champion. I walked into that locker room after Cundiff missed the kick, right? Lee Evans dropped the ball. I saw Lee Evans in the corner. It was inconsolable, literally. I remember that room. Like you remember these locker rooms, you know what I mean? I was in all those locker rooms all those years. I was in that locker room. Billy Cundiff comes out ashen-faced to the press podium after missing the kick. Harbaugh had to come out and had a timeout in his pocket. Like, I mean, they blew it. They had a chance, and it took them a whole year to get back, and they did it again, and I walked in that locker room, and I'm kissing the trophy, and Michael Phelps is over there, and, you know, everybody, it's a party. Like, it's amazing. I have both of those experiences of winning and losing as a reporter and just seeing the air come out of the building and just thinking for our city, that's never happened on our turf. And it's seize the day, man. I guess that's the, and I thought about that having you on, cause you won a big one, lost a big one, man. Like it's so close. It's just sitting there. It's always sitting there. Right.
Well, the worst part about losing, especially the way we did. And also, like you said before, the year the Ravens won it again for the second time, is when you lose a close game like that, you're always, well, what if I did this one thing better? Would that change different? What if I did this one thing? As opposed to, let's say you lose them by 30. Like, the whole game sucked. The whole game plan was terrible. But when you lose last second, you're always questioning, what could I did better on one play? You just don't know. Could that have been the difference in the game? You don't know.
Kim Herring is here, Super Bowl 35 chance. So when you think of one thing, what do you think about that year? If you have to give a cocktail speech and say, yeah, you played in the Super Bowl, you won a championship, famous team, what do you think about?
Ooh, that's a very tough question. I don't know. You know what? The friendships I kind of created that year, that was a special year. I ain't gonna lie. 2000 was a special year. And it culminated from all the things that happened the previous year with the Ray Lewis situation and how we dealt with that over the summer going into the season, and how, you know, it's Ray's famous speech that he gave to everyone during preseason camp about we need to get to the Super Bowl because it's in Tampa. and how that somehow culminated to our whole season, the ups and downs, and what the, you know, offense not scoring points or a touchdown for five games. And nobody could have, you know, saw that coming, but how we stuck together and didn't blame anybody. It was like, we don't care. Just do your job. We're going to be fine. And I think which is a culmination of personalities, which I think really made that team. And I don't think we're rarely ever going to see that again, especially in today's day and age of self-promotion. So, I mean, the team concept is, you know, I think it was a little bit better back when I played as opposed to now, because it's now it's, you know, everything's commercialized now, man. It's a lot different.
It is a lot different. I can say that from the inside and the outside. Next time I get together, I'll shave and try to look good for you. Dude, it's championship game week. I'm trying to get a little rugged, you know, feel about all of this. We've never done this before, and it's good to see you. I like doing this better than radio, looking at my friends and catching up to how young and spry you look, I think is what I started with Kim Herring.
Yeah, I don't know about the spry part.
You're still sprinting after all your kids is what you're doing.
Actually,
all right.
You know, it's actually I'm still trying to train my son and run with him. So I'm trying. He's pretty much surpassed me right now.
All right, look, man. One day you and I'll get together. Maybe Shannon Sharp. We'll all have some steamed vegetables together and some brown rice and try to. You mean you guys were the healthy guys, you know? When I see Shannon being this big star and stuff, all I remember is his little plastic things that had every nut and legume.
Yep.
Every piece of celery was measured out for him,
and
right?
And all his supplements, his box of supplements.
Like, oh, man. He had like all sorts of little things, right? They all had little jellies in them.
Yeah.
All right, dude. I appreciate you. Continue to be a, you know, good family man and fun resource for me to come and geese about what it used to be like to be a football player back in your day. So I appreciate all you ever did. And please come out and participate. If you're here at any point, let's go get a crab cake or, you know, I don't know, something.
Awesome, man. Listen, I think Baltimore is the only place I've really, really had those blue crab at. Awesome. I haven't found it anywhere else.
Get on I-95. You'll be down here at lunchtime. I'll take you over to Costas, all right?
Nice.
Kim Herring, number 20 in your program. Before that guy came from Miami here, from the U and all that stuff. He came down from Penn State. We didn't like him very much when he was at Penn State because we're Maryland people around here. But we learned to like him when he won Super Bowl 35 with us back 23 years ago. It's crazy how old I'm getting. We're counting down the top 25 stories of glory, all brought to you by Curio Wellness and Foreign Daughter. I have my I'm a Blunt Person shirt on. We are doing a cup of soup or bowl week. It is our crab cake row. Begins on the 5th. We're doing it all for the Maryland Food Bank. Yeah, we'll give you a cup of soup or bowl of soup if you come out for the Maryland Food Bank and donate that week. We're going to be featuring 100 charities over 5 days of live radio from 9 to 5 every day. I'm going to do my wacky Jerry Lewis bit. It's just going to last a whole week. We're going to start kicking up something good here for the community. I'm Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking Baltimore positive.